Welcome to KHC Podcasts, where we are here to help you manage your own health.
Welcome back. Live train 3. Apologies to anybody that up until now have been looking for live train 3 and thought that their computer link was broken. It wasn't that. It was because I hadn't recorded it. So apologies. By now you should know the live train format. This is an opportunity to introduce you to an idea. And the idea is you need to notice something now that up until now has not been obvious, right? And that essentially is your behaviour and the nature of the relationship between that and your thoughts and the link that there undoubtedly will be with what was normal for you in your past. So it's a management of change programme. We're on Life Train 3, so eyes down, look in, here we go. Taking Life Train further. The following discussion is an attempt to intrigue anyone interested in taking ideas within Life Train further. Well, I'm on this opinion that if you've done Life Train 1, Life Train 2A, 2B, and have turned up for Life Train 3, you're doing very well by now. The repercussions of behavioural awareness as taught within Life Train are endless, so that what you will do with this is your business. So it's a bit, all I'm trying to do is teach you how to ride a bike. Where you go on it is your business. Like if you want to do the Tour de France, away you go, right? And if you just want to go out and visit someone on a nice Sunday, great. But the one thing I'll be sure, you'll be able to ride the bike. That will be no longer your fear. Here are some of the ideas that are linked to the Life Train program and many that are fundamental to it. So Life Train is a behavioural awareness program. I think you know that by now. This means that it has been designed in an attempt to increase awareness of what really happens by recognising why, how and in what circumstances the body reacts. And I mean the body, I mean your body, and what you do, and what other people see you do, and what other people react to you when you do, and what you do by reacting to other people, and that all of that seems perfectly normal and a continuous stream with what you've always done, what other people do with you, and that all of that has been inculcated to you, made normal by your individual practical learning experience. So behavioural awareness should increase your awareness of the actual feeling of the body reacting. You should be able to respond to this, start to notice that your body is actually doing something. Your head is doing something which follows along afterwards, but that your body is actually doing something, responding to things in the way that has been made normal for you, but which is not necessarily beneficial. 3, increase the capacity to acknowledge that since your mind is also part of your body, reactions of the body produce results in the mind. You know, yes, I think that's important. I think it's quite well said. I will leave it there. And then increase the capacity to acknowledge that thoughts arise in perfect tune with the feelings that generate them. So, if you have a thought that somehow or another the end of the world is nigh, or you'd be better off dead, or that you're a really bad person, remember that that's a thought, right? And if you check out when you're having that thought, because you're now doing behavioural awareness, you will notice that you're always doing the same thing. Your body is actually doing the same thing. It is generating a feeling which generates that thought. That's not wrong. That's how it works. Your job is, how do you change it? So hopefully by having worked your way through the Life Train program this far, you will have more than a good idea of what Life Train is all about. But hold on a minute. The story about learning to ride a bicycle is a good one. Just because you've read a lot about bicycles doesn't make you able to ride one. So far in the Life Train program, you have only really had the opportunity to read about it. What makes you so sure that you can cut the mustard? So that's basically a threat. It's like a challenge to you to turn around and say, you can read about this to your blue in the face, all the while in convincing yourself, right, that you're a bad person and that nothing is going to change that, or that your circumstances are insurmountable, or you can't change the past. You can't change the past. Well, what you can do is you can change what you're doing right now. The only way that you're going to be able to change what it is that you're doing right now is to notice that you are doing something, that you're engaged in the stream, the flow of your life, and that that flow of your life comes from the past, where things happened and experiences had, and into the future. And if you want to change it, you need to stop doing what it is that you've always done. Stop reacting to the put-down. Stop being sensitive about things. Stop behaving, reacting, having gut feelings, disappointments, all that sort of stuff. All of that sort of stuff is learned, right? So what you're trying to do is wonder what would happen if you did something different. It's an experiment. Try doing something different. So follow the idea. Your body reacts without you realizing that this reaction has been copied from others. That's going back to Life Train 1, implicit learning. You will notice this reaction. If you're lucky, if you're trained, you will notice the reaction as a feeling. And it's not a said sentence, not as a sort of logic, not as, you know, by the time it gets into logic and thoughts and that sort of stuff, you've missed the opportunity to notice it as a feeling. The thought or thoughts will kick in after the reaction has happened. Almost simultaneously, in fact, but it will occur, they will occur there. The worst thing that happened, they will occur together. I'm saying, and behavioral theory will turn around and say, you're not going to think anything in your head that in all intents and purposes doesn't feel right, right? That at the end of this is a similar repeated experience that you're having. The thought or thoughts match the feeling. That's the interesting bit, I think, in this at Life Train 3, that what you're thinking is giving you a clue about what you're feeling, and that there is the story, the mood music fits the story, right? It offers some meaning to what it is that you're doing, the mood that you feel, the context within which you feel it. That's learned. You can change that, but only if you notice it. And you're accustomed to accepting that the thought causes the feeling. I am miserable because it's raining. I am miserable because my next door neighbor isn't nice to me. I am miserable because of stress in my job. You give yourself a reason for why it is that you're feeling what it is that you're feeling, and that allows you to continue to feel it. Here's that in bold type. In actual fact, the feeling causes the thought. The reason why you're thinking all that stuff is that you have the substrate of the feeling in the background. So if this is still difficult for you, please stop here and discuss this with your Life Train therapist. Yeah, I think that might be interesting to try and get in order to get a face-to-face appointment with someone at this stage. That's why we're doing the virtual clinic, so try and help you to do this yourself. You're going to have to do it yourself anyway, but all we're saying is, what's the difference between you sitting in, waiting for a month to come in and just sort of see me, sit in a chair opposite me in order to take away what it is that I'm saying to you, when in actual fact, the big difference it's going to make in your life is what you do and what you notice, what's making sense to you, why you keep falling for the same thing over and over again. Why is it that? Is that a fault? Or is that a fact? That's what's going on. And that in actual fact, in order to stop that, you need to change it. And you're not going to change it with having a whole raft of thoughts in your head that's going to make you change your behavior. That won't work. But once you change your behavior in a set of circumstances, stop being the fall guy, stop being the victim, stop having your eyes towards the floor, having that flurry of feeling of butterflies in your gut, the world has changed at that point in time. You can't think the same thing again. Your explanations for why it is that you've always done are no longer relevant when you change your behavior. And people are treating you differently because you're insisting on it. Because of your behavior, not falling for it, not because you're telling them to, then under those sets of circumstances, change is occurring. So we have no memory of our earliest childhood years, but yet we also know and see that these years are a time of great learning for children. We know that children copy every action, but we are at a loss to know what we ourselves have copied. What is it they say? You've learned the equivalent of 2 university degrees by the time you're 2. But if anybody was to ask you, well, what is it that you've learned? What? Tell me about that. Those 2 university degrees. You would go, I don't know. And because it's not learning in terms of, you're learning it in terms of A, B, C, D, E, F. You're learning how to react to things. You're learning what behaviors mean, how you should react to them, how you keep yourself safe, how other people keep themselves safe, what constitutes a threat, what is not a threat. All of that sort of stuff is sitting and happening inside you, not at brain level, but at feeling level, right? It's only later you get the opportunity to put stories on top of it and tell yourself that you're no good at this or bad at that, or, you know, that you can do this and you can't do that, and that this is what gets you down and this is what doesn't get you. And you tell yourself all these stories at later stage, which allows you to continue to do what it is that you learned largely mostly before you were five. So again, we're back to looking at that diagram, which I've worked out. Diagrams don't work that terribly well on podcasts, but it's that cycle then where learned reactions or microbehaviors produce feelings of our body reacting, and then we have emotionally equivalent conclusions, thoughts that match our feelings, right? Because emotions are basically what you feel, right? They're a pattern of feelings. And then what you do is you're not really noticing any of that because you're too busy telling yourself a story that fits these allegorical stories. You're telling yourself the same story over and over again, right? And then at the end of the day, other people have to react to you whilst you're doing all that. People react to you whilst you're having your reactions and your thoughts. And interestingly, the people that gravitate towards you are people who are going to let you do it, right? So at the end of the day, no change occurs within that loop. You accept the validity of your explanations and you accept the inevitability of your feelings. So we must accept that there are different ways of knowing. I think I've just said that. Behavioural awareness accepts that there are at least two distinct ways of knowing and explains them as being explicit and implicit. Explicit, you know what it is that's happening, you feel you have some sort of control over it, and implicit has already happened. It's what you would always do in those circumstances. Something that you've learned but not learned out of a book. This recognizes that there's an enormous amount of learning happening under the radar screen of your conscious awareness. That's what we're trying to, you know, get a grip of here at this moment in time. We can commit tasks to be performed accurately without concentrating our minds exclusively upon them, without any shadow of a doubt. Driving a car is often like this. We can spend a long time thinking about what we will do and say upon arrival at Aunt Dorothy's whilst negotiating traffic at roundabouts or motorways. So yeah, all the while you can dive in front of an articulated lorry, indicate that you're changing lane, have a quick glimpse in your mirrors, look over your shoulder, whatever it is that you do, all the while you're not even aware that you're doing it. You're too busy thinking about Aunt Dorothy and the last time you saw her and how she wasn't appreciative enough for the nice bunch of carnations that you bought because you thought you were a cheapskate, right? We can rely upon the fact that we trust our body's reactions to appreciate the significance of potentially dangerous situations rather than consciously computing every possible potential outcome. So you can safely negotiate all sorts of intricate social occasions, driving experiences, baking cakes, you know, all sorts of stuff that you can do. Pass away the whole while of a morning or an afternoon by doing something that requires you in order to act automatically. And then the next thing that happens is that you will do certain periods of time when you're doing a feeling and you'll say, you're overthinking, it's your fault. Rather than suggesting you're becoming aware of your thinking, it's destructive thinking because you're entertaining a feeling and you're spending a whole lot of time doing that and letting that feeling happen. And the other problem is try changing it easy. Try changing it, it'll seem stupid. Your body, your head will be telling you, well, that'll not work, don't do that. Whatever, do what it is that you've always been doing. You'll talk yourself out of it. So, but behavioural awareness is that the more you do it, the more that becomes instilled in you as a particular pattern of behaviour to a set of circumstances, then that becomes automatic as well, right? And you don't end up with the same thoughts, you end up with a different conclusion. So let's go back to the how to ride a bike analogy. When it happens that you find yourself riding a bicycle, you become qualified to describe it to someone else. I can ride a bicycle, let me tell you how to do it. The choice of words will be allegorical. You'll be trying to give the feel of what it's like to ride a bicycle. You're going to have trouble in trying to tell anybody how to ride a bicycle by telling them how to ride a bicycle. But you can tell them what it feels like to ride a bicycle, what it is that their goals, what it is that they're after. You know, you'll talk about confidence and balance and all sorts of stuff. And if a person has never balanced on a bicycle, they won't know what you're talking about. So no matter how hard you try or how good your explanation is, you will never be sure that the explanation you give will then enable someone else to ride a bicycle without having to learn for themselves. In many ways, this is the Life Train program again and again. They say that behavioral therapists do more talking than cognitive therapists. You're trying to talk somebody into an experience, it's probably easier just give them the information that they need. But if you're trying to increase people to expose themselves to the risk where within which of the risk of a certain circumstances within which they might learn something, it's a different kettle of fish, because you're then opposing the individual's caution in order to keep themselves safe, their patterns of behaviours that have exercised over a period of time, and of course with that, this sort of thought of self-criticism in the background. Someone talked to me about that this morning. Actually, I put it in better words than I can, but it was quite clear. So your explanation, precise in every detail, may be useful, but actually riding the bicycle will require a different sort of learning to take place. And we call this experiential learning, because what is learned is an actual experience. Once we have learned to ride a bicycle, we become equipped to explain what we have learned. However, just because we offer an explanation does not mean we then know what it is to do something we ourselves have never done. So how does this apply to the Life Train program? Teaching people to experience behavioral awareness is difficult, right? There's all sorts of patterns of behavior which is you're trained to do, and one of those things is that you're trained to avoid what it is that the Life Train program is trying to teach you. You're going to keep yourself safe by doing what it is that everyone have done when you were small to keep themselves safe, even if it didn't work, right? So this is because people place far too much importance on the accuracy of their own thoughts. For instance, we often imagine we can know what it feels like to do something. Thinking saves us the trouble and the expense of really doing it. We believe we can project ourselves into circumstances we have not yet experienced. And with imagined accuracy, we make judgments about those things we have not actually done. And this allows us to feel what it would be if we were to do some imaginary action. So we live our lives then by projecting ourselves, or don't live our lives by projecting ourselves into a set of circumstances. So have we learned to accept those circumstances, or have we learned to avoid those circumstances? I don't know, we're all different. But if you can start to notice it, it's going to be a big help. Interestingly, when we think about the future, the thoughts we have are a clue to how we really feel right now. So you're thinking about the future and it's going to be bright and bubbly and wonderful, then I know you're in good form at the minute, but you're not any better at telling the future than I am. And the other side of the coin is if you're telling the future is going to be terrible and full of despair and whatnot, I would suspect you're reasonably good at doing that feeling, and that you're just thinking whilst you do a feeling that you're good at, and that you haven't taken that feeling from the back doorstep. Explanations that we give ourselves about why things happen, especially things that involve us personally, are always clouded by a complete lack of awareness of implicit learning. We are inherently blind to the impact that life has been programmed to exert on our bodies. We assume that everything we do is under our conscious control, and that when we think, we are capable of understanding why we do things, why things happen to us, why we feel the way we feel, why we exert the influence we do, and why our circumstances force us into the lives we now lead. Again, we accept the repetition of thoughts within our head as being acceptable conclusions about why we are the people we have become. And Life Train hopefully will give you the opportunity to explode these myths. I think this is really one of the most interesting thoughts in the Life Train program here, and it's called Circular Thoughts, and I'm just going to read it for you here as best I possibly can, because I know I think people can find this really quite useful, right? So you take, for instance, a child who has a lot of anxiety behaviours. Imagine this child is there. Right? The child is nail-biting, tense face, trembling, worrisome thoughts. Okay, you could reasonably assume that the child we see doing these things is nervous. But this isn't an explanation of why they are nervous. It's merely a rather negative label or observation that we place on what they are doing. The difficulty comes when we explain to the nervous-looking child that the reason why it is engaged in nervous behaviours is because it is nervous. The child is nervous. Imagine the dilemma for a child who feels this nervousness, being told that the reason for his or her nervousness is because he or she is a nervous child. There's something, or somehow an assumption that nervous children will behave nervously. They look nervous, their thoughts are also noted to be nervous, and this is because they are nervous. This is the sort of circular thinking that allows the behaviour to continue, with even the child accepting that they must continue to do what it is they are doing, including thinking in a nervous way, because they are nervous. But here's a question worthwhile thinking about this. If the child's nervous behaviours were removed, what impact would this have on the child's thinking?
Okay, so Dr. McCauley has decided to break Life Train 3 into two parts because it's a lot of information. This is a good place to leave it. It's quite thought-provoking there. It would be worth asking yourself, you know, what happens if we start by changing the behaviour rather than labelling the child? Could shifting the external expression of anxiety reshape how the child experiences their own thoughts and feelings? So maybe it's not about defining them as nervous, but actually about helping them discover new ways of being. So that's an interesting place to leave it. And Dr. McCauley will be recording the next part. In the meantime, we would really love it if you would give us a wee call with a bit of feedback on how you're finding the podcast, if there's anything that you're struggling with, if you feel like it should be shorter again, or if you think that we could have went a bit longer with it. We would really love to hear from you. And once again, thanks for listening, and any issues or anything you need to discuss, just contact the health centre.